Today's Community News makes conversation the great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
Now, Alcross, it was a mission to the moon a couple of years ago. I caught up with Jennifer Heldman, a research scientist at the Ames Research Center in Mountain View, California, to talk about what Alcross was and the relationship to water on the moon. Welcome to the space show, Jennifer.
Thank you very much.
It's a little while now since Alcross hit the moon, but what was Alcross?
So Alcross stands for Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite, and this was a mission that we sent to the south pole of the moon to look for water ice. So what we did is we took the upper stage of the launch vehicle, and we impacted that into the moon. And then when we impact, we kicked up a big plume of dust, debris, ice, and then we had a shepherding spacecraft that flew behind it, was collecting data, sending that data back to Earth, and then that shepherding spacecraft flew through the plume, and then it also impacted. So it was our quick and dirty way to try and explore these permanently shadowed regions on the moon.
And what was your role in this mission?
I was on the science team and on the payload team, and I was also the observation campaign coordinator.
Wow, quite a lot of things there. So could you run through perhaps what each one involved?
Sure. So for the payload team, we had 9 instruments on the shepherding spacecraft. So 8 out of those 9 instruments we actually just bought from commercial companies, which is a very new way of doing business for NASA. And then the 9th instrument we built in-house at NASA Ames. And so we had to test and calibrate all of those instruments. So we put them in thermal vacuum chambers. We put them on vibe tables to simulate launch. We did calibrations. And so everything that we had to do to get the instruments ready for flight. And then for the science team, we outlined science requirements, analyzed data from previous missions to choose places where to impact, looked at the instruments to make sure that the instruments would match the science needs, and then after the impact, we're doing now is currently analyzing the data still. And then for the third role is the observation campaign coordinator. So we had a whole cadre of both professional and amateur astronomers that were also observing the impacts. And so I was responsible for coordinating all of those observatories, all of those telescopes, all the astronomers, making sure that they had all the information from the mission side that they needed to plan their observations, communicating with them during the actual mission to give them real-time updates. And now we're also working with them to analyze their data as well in the context of the spacecraft data.
Now, I remember at the time it hit, there's a lot of talk about there being a big flash and looking for that. And, of course, I thought, probably not. But I watched on the Internet, you know, dial up at about 2 frames per second or something like that. And, no flash, of course. What actually happened?
Yeah, so we actually collected the data we exactly thought we would from the science team. I think it was a good lesson for us in public affairs because there are a lot of videos of spectacular impacts and plumes and whatnot, and if we were observing from the surface of the moon, that's what it would have looked like. What we were observing when we, from the shepherding spacecraft, we have images, we have spectra, we saw the plume, we saw the dust plume, we actually have thermal data showing the impact site, we saw it get brighter, so we have all of this information so that we know that there was a dust plume, and it was actually quite large. About 20 seconds after impact, it was on the order of 10 to 12 kilometers across, so it was a pretty decent sized plume that was ejected. So we collected the data that we thought we would, and so I think we just have to manage expectations a little better next time.
So did you get any images, or was it just showing another data?
No, we have images. We had a visible camera that was on board, so we actually just have visible camera images of the plume, which we can see as it comes up and expands, so we can measure its size as a function of time. We also had 2 thermal cameras, so we can see the heat of the impact. We see the heat of the ejecta as it got warmed and thrown up above the lunar surface, and we can also see the impact spot, so we see where we warmed the lunar surface at the place where we impacted.
Obviously, data analysis is probably still going on.
Yes, absolutely. I think the data is a much richer data set than any of us really anticipated, which is a great thing from the science side. And so there's still a lot of work going on. We're very into the thick of analyzing the data and making sense of it and putting together all these different observations to then come up with a coherent picture of, okay, what happened in this impact? How did the plume evolve? You know, how did the cratering process work? And what does it tell us about these permanently shadowed regions?
So what have you learned so far?
One of the things, the big big driving question was, is there water on the moon or not? And we found pretty substantial evidence that, yes, there's water ice in this permanently shadowed region. We saw evidence for the ice grains and also for the vapor, water vapor, once it got above the lunar surface, and also OH, which is a photo dissociation product of the water. So we saw the water. And then we're also in the process of analyzing the spectra to see all the other compounds that were there. Oh, it's a much more diverse set of compounds than I was expecting, and so we're still working through that now.
So how many people would be working on this data now?
That's hard to say. I'm not really sure. We have the science team, but then also the data is delivered to the planetary data system, so it goes online, and so anyone around the world can download the data and analyze it. So I don't know how many people are looking at it now. Hopefully a lot, because there's a lot there.
Even private individuals can now access that.
Oh, absolutely. Yep, anyone with an internet connection can download all of the data.
So what's your role in it at the moment?
Right now, I'm specifically focusing on looking at the dust plume and characterizing the plume, and I'm looking at the color changes as the cloud evolved, and that's telling us about the particle sizes that are there. We think they're very small particles, and also the plume itself. We think there were two components to the plume, a high angle and a low angle, so I'm really looking at the dynamics of the plume at this point.
How did you get involved in this sort of work?
Well, being at NASA, we have a lot of projects going on, and when this opportunity arose, NASA said, well, what are some good mission ideas for, you know, trying to determine if there's water at the moon or not? And so we had some tiger teams and, you know, brainstorming sessions and put together some proposals to see what we could do, and this one happened to get selected, and the rest is history.
Well, thanks, Jennifer, for joining us on the space show.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
That was Jennifer Heldman, a research scientist at the Ames Research Center in Mountain View, California. She obtained a PhD from the University of Colorado, where she studied the nature of gully features on Mars. And I caught up with her at the Victorian Space Science Education Center. Now we're going to go to another feature here, a song called Water on the Moon. It's a song written by John Marmy and performed by John Marmy and Jeff Petro. And it tells the story of the L-Cross mission to the moon and the search for water there. Yeah, we try to play a bit of music here on the space show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drifting out in space, somewhere beyond the darkness, lie the answers to the human race. Stars shine deep in our galaxy. Will we see them face to face? Last tomorrow, curiosity will lead the way. I wanna go faster, faster. Hands in the air, we're gonna crash. Searching for the answers, my Galileo through his looking glass. That's for reason. A dreamer's eyes, we gaze into a sense of purpose, know my view. Like finding water on the moon. Galileo had his way. I'm sure he'd dance upon the stars. What a wondrous sense of destiny. First to set foot on Mars. I wanna go faster, faster. Hands in the air, we're gonna crash. Search of all the answers, my Galileo through his looking glass. That's for reason. Our dreamer's eyes, we gaze into a sense of purpose known by you. like finding water on the moon. It's time to disembrace. Followed into darkness by such sacrifice. We're on our way. We're on our way. I wanna go faster, faster. Hands in the air, we're gonna crash. Searching for the answers like Galileo. Dreamer's eyes, we gaze into a sense of purpose known by you. Like finding water on the moon, faster, faster. Hands in the air, we're gonna crash. Searching for the answers, like Galileo. Through a looking glass, that's the reason. Our dreamer's eyes, we gaze into a sense of purpose known by you. Like finding water on the moon. Finding water on the moon. Water on the moon.
Finding water on the moon. Yes, what a incredible thing that would be if that was found in large amounts. Well, we're just about out of time here on the Space Show. I must thank again Brian Lim, who's come all the way from Sydney to talk to us here on the Space Show. Kerry Doherty from the Powerhouse Museum, also from Sydney. And don't forget the space meeting tomorrow evening at the Oakley RSL in Drummond Street, Oakley, between 7 and 9:30. Rock up there if you can. But right now it's time to hand over to Mark Norman and Purple Haze.